Sandeham Shigro Shiyuta Parakamalam Shigram Vaishnavamsha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raganatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sarvaitam Savadutam Vrijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shiva Sakam Zvitam Scha Hey Krishna Karna Sindo Dinabando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshri Vrishubhanu Sudha Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakapa Trubhyascha Kripa Sinubhyevacha Padidanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Pranitananda Shadvaitika Radhar Shivasati Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
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 Today we're going to read from chapter 6 of the Nectar of Devotion. So again, in chapters, in the introduction, or in the preface, Prabhupada defines what it means, bhakti rasamrita sindhu. Bhakti means devotional service. Rasa means the mellow taste. And amrita means it's eternal, as opposed to temporary material sense enjoyment, which is chapalasukha. Sometimes it exists and sometimes it's alternating. Or chapalasukha means it's flickering. And bhogatyaga means sometimes we enjoy sense gratification, but then after some time it becomes hackneyed and we have to renounce it to try and find some other type of sense gratification. But devotional service is amrita, that is, it goes on forever. And it's sindhu, it's an ocean of happiness rather than simply a drop or two. And the preface or the introduction, the characteristics of pure devotional service were defined. Chapter 1, or the introduction defines pure devotional service. Chapter 1 explains about the six qualities, characteristics of pure devotional service. Chapter 2 describes its practice. Chapter 3, the basic qualifications for practicing devotional service. Chapter 4. Does anyone remember what the name of chapter 4 is? Anyone remember what chapter 4 in the Nectar Devotion is called? That's the next one. What's that? No, devotional service surpasses liberation. And then chapter 5, eligibility for devotional service, explains about, well, Prabhupada began to explain that there are three different levels of devotees, and that the basic qualification to take, there is no basic qualification to take up devotional service. Anyone can take it. Even if one is attached to material sense gratification, and mental speculation, one can still take up the process of devotional service. But if we want to come to the platform of pure devotional service after anartha nivritti, because there's devotional service in practice, devotional service in ecstasy, and devotional service in love of God. So pure devotional service is really when we're free from mental speculation and desires for material results, fruit of results. So if we want to come to the platform of pure devotional service, then we have to surpass anartha nivritti, which is getting free from anarthas, mainly desires of sense gratification and mental speculation. So for that we have to become wise. So there are four kinds of persons who approach Krishna. So the four kinds of desires we have are generally out of distress, out of feelings of insecurity, wanting money, out of inquisitiveness, and out of a desire to understand the Absolute Truth. Jignasa Shreya Uttama. Just like we've heard, Tad Viganartham Sagurum Eva Bigachet Samitpani Strotriyam Brahmanishta. There's qualifications for the disciple that he has to be jignasu, inquisitive, to understand the Absolute Truth. So that's the wise person. So to become wise, we can execute devotional service with determination and try to give up our material desires and our misconceptions. Then we can rise up to the platform of a wise person, and from the wise person he can accept the platform of pure devotional service, which is free from mental speculation and fruit of desires. Instead of that, there is a desire to love Krishna. There is a desire to cooperate with the devotees, make friendship with the devotees, help the innocent, and avoid those who are antagonistic towards pure devotional service. So that's the eligibility. One has to become free from the bodily concept of life. That's the main obstacle in executing pure devotional service. But as far as devotional service goes, the next chapter, Rupa Goswami says that there is no material impediment to practicing devotional service. It doesn't matter what country we were born in, whether we were pure or impure, what our position in the Vanashram system is. It's simply a question of taking up the process of devotional service, following the rules and regulations under expert guidance, and coming to the platform of pure devotional service. That everyone is eligible. There's no material disqualification. And one verse that was cited, yata kankshana yati kangsa rasa vidani daha tata diksha vidanena dvijatam jayate nrina. Srila Sanatana Goswami in his Hari Bhakti Vilas says, just like one can turn bell metal into gold in an alchemical process by the mixture of mercury, similarly, by the practice of devotional service under proper guidance, even an ordinary person can be made into a Brahmin. Of course, we have the example when Srila Prabhupada's godbrother, who was in England in the 1920s, was preaching, and one Lord Zeppelin approached him, who was formerly the governor of Bengal, and asked Srila Prabhupada's godbrother, can you make me a Brahmin? So he said, no problem, I can make you a Brahmin. But you have to give up illicit sex, intoxication, meat eating, gambling. So his reaction was, impossible. So everyone can become first a Brahmin, everyone can become can arrive at the mode of goodness, and even transcendental, reawaken our love of God. But we have to follow the process. Now, chapter 6 is called How to Discharge Devotional Service. Well, first of all, we should try to understand that this is a progression from understanding what is bhakti rasa, sindhu, then what are the different steps or stages in achieving the ocean of love of God, and the different characteristics, or what is process, what does it mean, and what are the different characteristics, then the eligibility for the different candidates, that is to pass as liberation, that there's nothing superior to pure devotional service, then what is the eligibility to become to practice devotional service, and how devotional service is the purest of all different types of practices, and now how to discharge devotional service. Srila Rupa Goswami has given us all the preliminary information, who's qualified, what is devotional service, what its characteristics are, who's eligible to practice it, how it's superior to all other kinds of activities, and now in the sixth chapter he'll begin to tell us how to practice pure devotional service. And he's taking his instructions from the Hari Bhakti Vilas, which was compiled by his brother, Śrīla Sanātana Gosvāmī, specifically to describe what are the activities of the Vaishnavas. But Śrīla Rūpa Gosvāmī is taking the essential instructions from the Hari Bhakti Vilas, because the Hari Bhakti Vilas was more or less compiled with the smarter Brahmins in mind. It appears that at the time of Śrīla Rūpa Gosvāmī and Sanātana Gosvāmī, that there was a class of persons known as the smarter Brahmins, and they were very influential in society, and they had very strict rules and regulations, although they were not generally very interested in devotional service to Krishna. But they defined who was on what level by how strictly they followed the rules and regulations. In order to bring the Vaishnavas up to the standard so they'd be respected within society, because after all it's very difficult to preach within a society if one is not well respected. Therefore he compiled the Hari Bhakti Vilas with very strict rules and regulations how the Vaishnavas should behave. But Śrīla Rūpa Gosvāmī has taken 64 of those, actually not exactly 64, something less than that, probably around 50 of them, because some of them are repeated more than once, and some of them are so close to each other you can hardly tell the difference between them. But 64 different activities for the Vaishnavas, which will help one elevate oneself, which will help elevate one to the platform of pure Krishna consciousness. As we've already heard, that all the rules and regulations are so that we always remember Krishna and never forget Him. So we shouldn't become confused and think that there's something separate from that rule and regulation, or maybe two rules and regulations, always remember Krishna and never forget Him. They're all connected to that. Now at the beginning, Śrīla Rūpa Gosvāmī will give us 10 necessary activities just to begin devotional service. Then he'll give us 10 more to advance in sadhana bhakti. And then he'll tell us that in the first 10 there's 3 most important. And then at the end he'll say there's 5 which are most effective. So how these 10 or 3 and then 5 fit together, that takes a little thoughtfulness. That's not exactly explained. But here Śrīla Rūpa Gosvāmī will give us the basic principles and not the details. A basic principle, he says, is something just like one should accept a spiritual master. How to follow his instructions are not explained. Or how one spiritual master's instructions will differ from another. But in any case, the basic principles are explained here. And the details can be worked out some other way. The following are 10 preliminary necessities for beginning the discharge of devotional service and regulative principles. So in the beginning, the neophyte observes the above-mentioned 10 principles. Surely he will quickly make good advancement in Krishna consciousness. So this is just to begin discharge of devotional service and regulative principles. Now we've heard before that there's a Dao Shraddha. So at first there's some faith, there's some liking, some attraction, and then there is sadhu sangha. We associate with the devotees, we hear about Krishna, we learn about the process, but then there is some time we want to become more serious, how to actually become conscious of Krishna. Then there is what's called bhajana kriya, the actual cultivation of bhajana kriya, and Prabhupada used to always say that begins with accepting a bona fide spiritual master. So where did he get that idea from? Well, here it's in Śrīla Rūpa Gosvāmī's Nectar Devotion, that the first principle to begin the regular discharge of devotional service is accepting the shelter of the lotus feet of a bona fide spiritual master. This is called shiksha, that we have to hear from the devotees and we have to follow their instructions. We have to hear from them, then we have to inquire what they're talking about, how it actually applies to my life, how can I put into practice. And then if we follow that, That's called accepting the shelter of the lotus feet of a bona fide spiritual master. It's not that you have to look around and see someone who has feet that are shaped like lotuses and then dive into those feet, you know, and stay there. Become real tiny and stay under those lotus feet. No, accepting the lotus feet of a bona fide spiritual master means to hear submissively from the devotees, then to inquire from them what it means, what are they talking about practically, and then to follow their instructions. And then, it says, becoming initiated by the spiritual master and learning how to discharge devotional service from him. This is probably one reason why initiation is taken as very important within our society, because it says it right there in the Nectar Devotion. It's hard to argue with it, with Rupa Goswami. With me, it would be very hard to argue with, but Rupa Goswami, it's a little difficult to argue with. Therefore, obviously, there's going to be a desire to take initiation if one wants to advance in devotional service. But the first principle is accept the shelter of the lotus feet of a bona fide spiritual master. So it's not that initiation comes first and then the shelter comes second. It's that supposedly one is actually hearing and following and understanding from so many different devotees, and then accepting the shelter of a bona fide spiritual master and learning how to discharge devotional service from him. Now later on, we'll find that there are five principles that are very important in the discharge of pure devotional service. I'm sure most of you know them because they're our daily practice. Namely, chanting the holy name, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, living in a holy place, worshipping the deities, and associating with the devotees. So the question is, where are these 10 principles that we're going to hear, especially these first three, Srila Rupa Goswami says later on, which I'll quote. The Prabhupada says, out of the 20, we'll read 20 of them. The first three, namely accepting the shelter of a bona fide spiritual master, taking initiation from him, and serving him with respect and reverence are the most important. So these are said to be the most important out of the first 20. And if we don't discharge, if we don't do the first 20, then neither we can discharge pure devotional service, and nor can we properly elevate ourselves to the platform of sadhana bhakti, or devotional service and practice. In other words, without the first 20, we go nowhere in devotional service. And if the first three are the most important, out of the 20, the first three, namely accepting the shelter of a bona fide spiritual master, taking initiation from him, serving him with respect and reverence, are the most important, then why is it that Rupa Goswami doesn't explain those as the five, as it doesn't appear to be one of the five most important items? Instead of the five most important items, he has associating with the devotees. I don't think it's explained, at least in Prabhupada's, as anything more than that, in the sense of, as a title. There's five potent forms of devotional service. And here Rupa Goswami says, doesn't say it. Rupa Goswami has stated that the five kinds of devotional activities, namely residing in Mathura, worshipping the deity of the Lord, reciting Srimad Bhagavatam, serving a devotee, and chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, is so potent that a small attachment for any one of these items can arouse devotional ecstasy even in a neophyte. So here it says just serving a devotee. And here it says, maybe it doesn't say, at the end of this chapter, chapter 6, he says, out of the 64 items, 5 items, namely worshipping the deity, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, associating among the devotees, Sankirtan, living in Mathura are very important. So it's interesting that associating with the devotees is serving a devotee. And then we have to fit into the first three items. So obviously, service to the devotee means more than just service to the devotee. As we normally, a neophyte will think that service to the devotee means I accept my spiritual master and to hell with the rest of the devotees. Doesn't really matter how I act towards the rest of the devotees, and everything's cool because my spiritual master will protect me. No, actually, one accepts that someone is a spiritual master because they're the most exemplary servant of the other devotees. After all, even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Gopi Bharata Pada Kamalayor Dasa Dasa Anudasa. He claimed that he wasn't Naham Vipra, Nacharna Katira, Naham Vapi, Nasudra. He said, I'm not a Brahmin, I'm not a Vaishya, I'm not a Shudra, I'm none of these things. Gopi Bharata Nikilasya Purnamrita, that I am simply the servant of the self, servant of the servant of the servant, of the self-effulgent Supreme Personality of Godhead who maintains the gopis in Vrindavan. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu claimed himself to be no more than the servant of Krishna's servants. So obviously, one who's the best servant of the devotees, then that's what it means to become a spiritual master. Not that I'm a spiritual master, so now I don't have to serve all the other devotees. Now all the other devotees can serve me. Because I'm a master. They're all my servants. No, actually the devotee, the Uttama Adhikari, who's the best devotee, his vision is that he's simply a servant of his spiritual master, as I explained before. And that he's learning from his disciples how to serve his spiritual master. Because he knows that whatever instructions he gives are not his instructions, they're the instructions coming from his spiritual master in Krishna. That Krishna is in his heart, and Krishna is using him as an instrument to give instructions about how his disciples can advance in devotional service. And when he sees his disciples taking his spiritual master's and Krishna's instructions and following them, then he learns from them how to become a better servant of his spiritual master. So that's the vision of the Uttama Adhikara. And that is the real vision, to be a spiritual master. Now an Uttama Adhikara, if he came down and he thought and he just acted all the time, oh Prabhu, to his disciples, my dear disciple, I'm surrendered to you, I'm learning from you. And the disciples would get all puffed up and think, yeah, my spiritual master, poor person, he has to learn from me. he's not teaching me. I'm teaching him by my great devotional service. He can make advancement. Then if he thought like that, then, bye-bye disciple. Then it's all over. So the Uttama Adhikari, first of all, if he thinks like that, he's not going to preach to anyone. So that cannot be imitated either. So generally speaking, most spiritual masters, hopefully, will be at least in the second class platform. And even an Uttama Adhikari, when they take up the platform of being a spiritual master, they have to come down to the second class. Otherwise, it's not possible to preach. So one has to descend to the second class to be able to discriminate. And the topmost Uttama Adhikari, he sees everyone except for himself as a great devotee of Krishna. And the second class devotee, he's able to discriminate, but it's a positive discrimination. He's able to understand theoretically that he's actually not the doer, so he doesn't become attached to the giving instructions. He doesn't consider himself to be the master. He still considers himself to be a servant of the spiritual master. It's not that after the spiritual master leaves his body, then the relationship is cut. Actually, the relationship is transcendental, therefore it's eternal. So the devotee never considered himself to be more than simply the servant of his spiritual master. And as a servant of the spiritual master, one may take up the position of becoming a spiritual master himself, but one never considers oneself to be the spiritual master. One only considers himself as taking up a service. So whether one is washing the dishes, or cleaning the floor, or distributing books, or doing the treasury, or being a spiritual master, it's all the same. One is simply a servant, an instrument for the previous acharyas. So in that way, by such instructions and example, one learns under the guidance of different devotees who's the best servant of the devotees? Who's most fixed in serving his spiritual master? And by such service, is able to serve the devotees the best. Is the most, not only serving the devotees, cooperating with the devotees, loving Krishna, but is able to preach. Because that's what we have to be trained up for, is how to assist the preaching mission. We're in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission, and he had everyone assisting the mission. We read Chaitanya Charitamrita, we find somehow or another, everyone was a servant or an assistant to the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And we have to learn how to avoid the persons who are unwanted. So that we have to learn from devotees who are more advanced than us. And when we become convinced that someone actually knows what they're doing, and that I can actually surrender to that person, then we can accept a spiritual master. Otherwise, if we take a spiritual master's fashion as a, you know, more or less, everyone else is doing it, so I should do it too. You know, I've been a bhaktin for so long, and everyone's kicking me around, and I'm embarrassed when they ask, you know, how long have you been in the movement? I've been in the movement 20 years, and what's your name? Bhakti so-and-so. Really, what's wrong with you? So I'm embarrassed, I don't want to... So those reasons are not very substantial reasons. The real substantial reason is that I'm convinced that if I follow the example and instructions of this person, it'll help me elevate myself to a higher platform of devotional service. Now, it doesn't mean... Now, if I think that the person has to be an Uttama Adhikari, and I can only surrender to an Uttama Adhikari, then I may have to wait 20, 30 years, or 50 years, or whatever, because Uttama Adhikaris are not so common. A devotee like Srila Prabhupada is not so common. Otherwise, probably, you know, devotional service, everyone would be a devotee in the universe. So it's not so common to find such an advanced devotee. So does that mean I should just wait for an Uttama Adhikari to come along? And first of all, unless I advance in devotional service, then how will I know who an Uttama Adhikari is? I mean, among Srila Prabhupada's godbrothers, practically speaking, none of them really recognized that he was an Uttama Adhikari until he actually went to the West and started to preach. So then, but in order to come to the platform and be able to recognize who an Uttama Adhikari is, I have to render practical devotional service. But it says here, unless I accept the shelter of the lotus feet of a bona fide spiritual master and take initiation, I can't even render devotional service. So what am I supposed to do? Well, I guess the first thing we're supposed to do is accept, number one, accepting the shelter of the lotus feet of a bona fide spiritual master. So a bona fide spiritual master is a lot less of a qualification than being an Uttama Adhikari. To be a bona fide spiritual master, one doesn't have to be an Uttama Adhikari. Is everyone confused enough by now? In other words, there's a difference between being a bona fide spiritual master and being an Uttama Adhikari. Even a Kanista Adhikari can be a bona fide spiritual master, or a Madhyama. And generally it's the Madhyamas who preach, and therefore generally they're taking as spiritual masters. All spiritual master means one has to be simply bona fide. Just like if you're representing a company, you're a business representative, and you're selling the company's product, then all you do is have to sell the company's product, and you're bona fide. Now, if you sell, in the name of the company, you sell your own product, then sometime or another, the company may catch up with you and declare that you're bogus. You're not representing the company. So to be a bona fide representative of the company, you just have to sell their product. Now, you may be an expert salesman. You may not be such an expert salesman. At least you're a bona fide salesman. Similarly, the postman probably used to compare the spiritual master to a post peon. Not that it's a very exalted position. That to become a postman, the only qualification is you take the letter as you got it and you give it to the person. Not that you take the letter and think, well, who knows what's in the letter? I better check it out before I give it to the person. You open it up and say, I don't like that. You cross that out and put your own. And then you hand it to him. He opens the letter and says, I wonder why this person crossed out half the letter and put something else. Now, to be a bona fide postman, you simply have to take the letter and deliver it. So to be a bona fide spiritual master, all you do is have to take Krishna's message and repeat it. That's all. Now that sounds pretty easy, doesn't it? It should be easy. Unfortunately, we don't find it so easy. Even Prabhupada talks about that the spiritual master has to be perfect. Immediately we start imagining he must have all mystic powers. He sees my heart, exactly what I'm thinking. You know, he even thinks about what I'm not thinking. He knows the past, present, future. He's completely perfect. And even if he does something that seems imperfect, it's only a test. Just to test me and see how faithful I am. It's all yoga maya. So we can create this whole ridiculous understanding what the spiritual master is and imagine all kinds of things and create cults. Disciples are imagining something, the spiritual master is imagining something. Then he starts imitating. And as we learn from Nectar of Devotion, if the spiritual master starts imitating a person who's actually on a higher platform, or on a platform which is impossible to even anyone to practice except for Krishna, then one is sure to become degraded. It's not possible to do something artificially over a long, long period of time. Just like one of my friends who became a spiritual master, one of the original 11. But I knew him before, you know, I knew all the devotees practically became spiritual masters before and afterwards. But he was my friend, so one day he came up to me and said, "Wow, I got all mystic powers. I'm a guru." I said, "Well, this is crazy. What are you talking about?" Because he was thinking, well, everyone else told me I'm supposed to have all the mystic powers, so I guess that's what I have. He thought when you become a guru, you become, you know, automatically an Uttama Adhikara, because that's how they were all talking. So he thought, now I must have all the mystic powers. So eventually he became so frustrated that, you know, he left. Because he realized, you know, he couldn't really keep up. It was impossible for him to keep up what he thought he was supposed to do as a spiritual master. So one can't imitate, nor is one necessary. One has to act according to the level. So one has to be honest. In other words, if one is not an Uttama Adhikari, the topmost devotee, one can't claim to have a completely objective vision on everything. You know, someone, you know, just like Prabhupada never, as I said, he never claimed that the spiritual master doesn't make any defects. We have that there's four defects, imperfect senses, committing mistakes, being an illusion, and cheating. So the spiritual master is not supposed to make the mistakes. No, Prabhupada didn't say that. He said, I may be imperfect, as a matter of fact, I am imperfect. But I give Krishna's knowledge, and that's perfect. Krishna is perfect. That's our claim. Is that the knowledge is perfect, and that's what we're giving. That's what makes us perfect. As long as we're following, repeating Krishna's message, and trying to follow it to the best of our ability, that's our perfection. There's no other perfection. So Prabhupada said, I may, you know, fall asleep in class, I may mispronounce verses. You may go through the Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad Gita, you'll find millions of mistakes. Not millions, but thousands and hundreds of mistakes. So is it a mistake? No, it's not a mistake from the absolute point of view. But if we think, well, actually, maybe Krishna made a mistake and my spiritual master's verse is correct. We think, well, you know, here in the lecture, Prabhupada says it's api, and here it says it's tada. So who made a mistake, Krishna or Prabhupada? Or maybe it's, you know, maybe there's two ways of saying it. Krishna actually said two verses, exactly the same verse. Then we try and readjust, you know, which is perfect, which is imperfect. We get all bewildered and we think, wow, this is really confusing. No, the spiritual master is not supposed to be perfect in that sense. We'll find that there are many seemingly contradictions in what Prabhupada said, even within his books. The Prabhupada said his perfection is how he's trying to preach Krishna consciousness. In one part of the book, he doesn't say, you know, surrender to Krishna. In the other part, he says, surrender to Shiva or surrender to me. No, he's consistent. He's trying to serve Krishna to the best of his ability, and he's teaching others how to do the same. That's his perfection. Then we find the best spiritual master we can, that we can actually surrender to and follow the instructions. Then we can, it says here, becoming initiated by the spiritual master and learning how to discharge devotional service from him. We have to accept someone, you know, as our authority and follow them. Otherwise, we can't make any advancement. So when we get that urge to make advancement, we actually want to make, actually surrender, then we should do it. Otherwise, we can accept the spiritual master, and we can see people don't surrender. There are devotees who give initiation. I remember there was one devotee from the Gaudiya Math. He was giving initiation in South America. And whoever came to the initiation, he initiated. Because they have a different idea of what initiation is. So the milkman came and he was delivering milk. And while he was delivering the milk, he got initiated. This is the true story. And here even in the Benelux, we have one devotee, he's initiated, he doesn't know the name of his spiritual master. You see, he refers to him as that nice old man. So that's possibly one way of taking initiation. It's not very beneficial. It won't really help one to charge a devotional service. One may feel confident that, you know, someone is taking my sins or something, and I feel a lot better about that. But it won't really help one go anywhere in devotional service. So therefore it says, initiated by the spiritual master and then learning how to discharge devotional service from him. So we heard previously in verse 5, in chapter 5, that Rupa Goswami says that one may take initiation, but unless one actually practices the regulations of devotional service, one actually will fall down from the position of devotional service. And then 3, obeying the orders of the spiritual master with faith and devotion. So, it is not that simply mechanically we're going to follow the rules and regulations. But we have to actually learn how to obey the orders with faith and also devotion. So faith, not blind faith. Not that my spiritual master is telling me to do something and that I haven't the faintest idea what he's talking about. But I don't want to challenge them. It's called blind following. So I'll just forget about it because who can understand what he's talking about? I don't want to disturb his mind by questioning him. So I just forget about it. That way everyone's happy, especially Mitt. Or, blind following, he told me to do it. I don't really understand what it's all about, but I'm going to do it anyhow. Or absurd inquiries. So these two things. One is blind following is fanaticism. It's a product of simply sentimentalism. That's called, and the other is, well, one is dharma and the other one is mental speculation, absurd inquiries. I haven't the slightest intention, the smallest intention to actually do something about, I'm going to ask a question. I haven't the slightest inclination to do anything on the basis of the answer, but it's just going to satisfy my curiosity. Or I want to test and see whether how intelligent this person is, if I can defeat them. Especially in Holland, there's a lot of... people study the books. Sometimes people study the books just to try and figure out how I can find something in the book that I defeated the person. You know, now I know, it's all, you know, it's all, there's a defect. And if there's a defect, why do I have to be followed so carefully? Who knows how many defects there are? 4 regular principles? Ha! Why there has to be 4 regular principles? Who said? Maybe there's a mistake. So then we, you know, absurd inquiries. So these two things are condemned. Either mental speculation or sentimentalism. That one has to get a clear understanding through submission, service, and inquiries. So, devotional service involves all 3. Not just submission. Because first of all, we can see that most of the devotees in the movement, they're really all not that submissive. That actually, they're somewhat submissive. Everyone is submissive to a certain degree because we're discharging devotional service. Therefore, we're submissive to that extent. But the thing now, when we come to the movement, we look around and we think, oh, these devotees are so surrendered. I remember when I first came to Buffalo. And at that time, Rupanuga had come in, I think it was in March, and I came around in May. So the eldest devotee in the temple was 2 months in the movement. But when I came to the temple and saw all the devotees, I think, wow, these devotees are so advanced, they're so surrendered, you know, they're so sincere about what they're doing. And then I asked Rupanuga, I said, how long have you been practicing? Because he was the topmost senior devotee. So he said, 2 years. I said, wow, that's incredible. Like, imagine how advanced he must be. So when we first come, we generally come with some awe and reverence. And then after a few months or whatever it takes, and gradually we get familiar with the devotees, and we think, how long have you been practicing? You know, 7 years. Oh, you're still a neophyte, right? Just beginning. So then we kind of lose that perspective. Prabhupada, I remember one time I went on an engagement with him and in Buffalo. And Brahmananda came, we went to a university. And Prabhupada gave a lecture there. And he said, Brahmananda, he was pointing at Brahmananda, he's one of my senior devotees, one of my most advanced devotees. So Brahmananda, he was the oldest devotee at that time. He was actually in the movement for, so this was in 1969, the beginning of 69, and he joined the end of 66. So he was in the movement for around 3 years. So he was an advanced senior devotee at that time. The Prabhupada singled out. Therefore, faith. Faith is not blind faith, but faith based upon an actual understanding of what we're doing, a clear understanding. Then we should render our service for that faith. If we don't know what we're doing, then the first thing to do is become humble and then inquire submissively until we do understand. And then when we understand, then we should act. So without being submissive, without being humble, then where will the actual inquiry be and the willingness to follow the instruction? Unless we're humble and we're inquisitive, then how will we actually understand what to do it correctly, to actually get the results of pure devotional service? So we have to do it with faith, but not blind faith. And then there has to be some devotion. Devotion means we have to follow the instructions with the whole understanding of devotion, to please Krishna, to please the devotees out of love rather than simply for some other ulterior reason. So we're going to go through the first 10 today. Following the footsteps of great acharyas, teachers under the direction of the spiritual master. I'm just going to read through these things because by the time we're done, we're probably going to go over the next chapter. We start with these first 10. So I'm just going to read through them now without going over them in detail. And 5, inquiring from the spiritual master how to advance in Krishna consciousness. 6, being prepared to give up anything material for the satisfaction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. This means that when we are engaged in the devotional service of Krishna, we must be prepared to give up something we may not like to give up, and also we have to accept something which we may not like to accept. 7, residing in a sacred place of pilgrimage like Dwarka or Vrindavan. 8, accepting only what is necessary, or dealing with the material world only as far as necessary. 9, observing the fasting day in Ekadasi. And 10, worshipping sacred trees like the banyan tree. So each one of these are actually quite deep, and without actually performing these, we don't really make any advancement in devotional service. We won't even be able to perform devotional service. And then the next 10 will tell us, 10, it says, without following 10 principles, we can't even properly elevate ourselves to the platform of sadhana bhakti, or devotional service in practice. So this is actually very thoughtful, you know. It has a lot to do with the standards we set for ourselves and for others. what is actually devotional service and practice, and how to elevate ourselves to devotional service and love and ecstasy, and then love of God. Any questions about this? Representative of God. Then the Sakshat means directly, means representative. As good as God.
The master is not perfect. So
perfect in what way?
Seem as good as God.
In terms of what?
Well,
just like if we see Prabhupada, his activity, someone may think their activity is a very nice old man. Someone may see like that. But how do we see it? What are the important ingredients in Prabhupada's life that make him extraordinary? What's the important thing in Prabhupada's life that made him more than just an ordinary person? Yeah. Well, he preached Krishna consciousness. And of course, it was quite effective. Therefore, he was certainly seen as a first-class Vaishnava. But the essential thing he did was he followed his spiritual master's orders and preached Krishna consciousness. Therefore, he acted as an instrument. Now, if we look at it intellectually, none of us are actually the doers. That either Maya is doing everything, because we're surrendered to Maya, or Krishna is doing everything, because we're surrendered to Krishna. Now, there can be an in-between. Sometimes we may be under the influence of Maya, sometimes we may be under the influence of Krishna. Therefore, before we accept a spiritual master, we should see that, at least, that person is under the influence of Krishna. Now, how much they're under the influence of Krishna, that may not be so obvious, but at least they're under the influence of Krishna, the internal energy of Krishna. They're performing devotional service, and they're explaining Krishna consciousness. So who's actually doing it? Now, if it was up to me as a spiritual soul, since I don't know anything outside what Krishna is telling me right now, therefore I have to accept that actually Krishna has to get the credit for what I'm saying. So in that sense, I'm not Krishna, the person who's conscious, but I know that right now what my body is doing, and because I'm allowing it to happen, is being done by Krishna. Now the only credit I can really get is I'm not getting in the way of Krishna. But that's pretty significant. That means that Krishna is actually, if I'm not getting in the way, then it is the spiritual master or who's ever preaching is as good as Krishna. It's actually Krishna who's doing the preaching. Especially if I'm repeating exactly what Krishna said, according to my realization, in these books. Then this body, the mind and the intelligence are actually under Krishna's control. And it is Krishna who's doing the preaching. Now if I add something of my own, or if I don't like what Krishna says and I don't, then we can say that, this person, why am I worshipping this person? They're getting in the way. But all the spiritual master has to be is transparent. And if we give him all our devotion and love, not only Diksha Guru, but any of the devotees who are transparent, then I'll see Krishna in that person. Then I'll actually see that through that person, I'm having a direct relationship with Krishna. Well, not necessarily. You can't say that because others have fallen down. Therefore, that categorically, every spiritual master. Yeah, so then everyone can go to hell together. As soon as you do that, when we say spiritual master, we mean any superior devotee, not only the Diksha Guru. But once we start establishing that principle, we'll never understand Krishna, what to speak of anything else. Then any we won't get past number one. And therefore we'll keep ourselves in a platform, we'll never become Krishna conscious. On the other hand, to artificially raise someone up to the level of Uttama Adhikari, and then, have a certain expectations which are impossible, that's not very good. But as soon as we stop seeing that the example is not black and white, either you're a divine or you're a demon. The example is the iron and the fire. If the iron's in the fire, then it gets hotter and hotter. And there are different degrees of hotness. Eventually becomes like fire. So the devotees, as much as they're in the fire of Krishna consciousness, to that extent they represent Krishna. Then Krishna is actually there. So it's not black and white, demon or devoted. It's the iron and the fire example. So then there may be different degrees of devotees, and anyone who's more in the fire than me becomes worshipable. And by worshipping them, as far as they're actually more in the fire, when I see their example of how they're more consistent and more devoted to me in their service, then I take the good side. The bad side I can recognize, but I take the good side. So similarly, with a spiritual master or a Diksha guru, for instance, the same thing can be there, but it's not the black and white. Either they're divine or they're a demon. Either, you know, I thought they were Uttama, and I found out they're just a Madhyam. Why do I have to give, or less than that? So why do I have to give them any respect? It's just the Western upbringing we have. We can't compartmentalize. Either the person's perfect or he's, you know, useless. Either they're taking me back to Godhead or, you know, simply by their potency, without much effort on my part, what's the sense of surrendering to them? So therefore some discrimination has to be there. And our society won't really make any real substantial progress or even become stable until we actually develop a little thoughtfulness. So we've gone through a platform where we're completely unthoughtful. The majority of the devotees are accepting some, you know, Prabhupada left, and therefore we need someone like Prabhupada, and these people, you know, should be like Prabhupada because we need them, and they thought, you know, this is nice, we can get all these followers and we can push on the movement nicely and I won't have so many problems anymore myself. And then they fell into the difficulty themselves. So not much thoughtfulness. So they fell down. So as a result is more thoughtfulness, understanding things more clearly and sensitively. No, now we go to the other side. Now we don't like anyone. Everyone is suspect. You know, anyone who's chanting, we don't know what's lurking in their hearts. You know, anyone who smiles at us, we wonder, what is behind that smile? You know, why are they laughing? Why are they seeing, you know? So then everyone becomes suspect. So then after we get tired of that, then we think, well, we do need a few, you know, pure devotees, elevate them again, and we'll go back the other way. So what we really need is a little thoughtfulness of what it's all about, a little understanding that, you know, devotional service is a very big, large continuum. It's not, you know, either you're completely an out-and-out neophyte or you're, you know, you're in the spiritual world talking with Krishna. There's a huge continuum between one stage and another. So we may not be able to understand that, but we should be able to at least recognize that someone is a little bit higher than I am. And therefore, the devotee I choose as my authorities that I follow should be the devotees who help me recognize who's on a higher level and how to appreciate them. So the more the devotee is able to help me recognize who's on the higher level, all varieties of devotees and what way they're on a higher level, and how to help the innocent and bring them up, and how to avoid the atheists, and how to love God, then they become my guru. Then I can take instruction from them. I was listening to a lecture by Bhaktivedya Purna Maharaj, and he was saying that generally in our society, we're really into ritual. We think the whole relationship with the spiritual master is mostly concerning a ritual. If there's no ritual, we don't think anything's happening. You know, it has to be fire sacrifice and bees and so many rituals. You bow down, you have guru puj, and that's the whole relationship. It's a ritual.
Isn't it
sanskara? I didn't say it's not part of the relationship, but that's not the whole relationship. The more important part of the relationship is the vani, to hear, understand, consider thoughtfully, and then the practice. That's the deeper relationship. That's why all the rituals go on, to help us actually develop faith in the vani. So without developing faith in the vani, then we remain on a lower platform. So that's what we really have to do. That's why we have the classes. So that, you know, the understanding becomes deeper, and then, you know, the relationships become deeper. Diksha or shiksha, it's the same thing. You listen to the person, to the devotee, try and understand what they're saying, follow the instructions, and if you make advance in devotional service, then it's positive. Then you know that this person is acting as my guru. Now, even more than that, we look at the person's example, if they're actually following what they're saying, and then it makes them even better. Sanatana Goswami told Haridas Thakura, some people preach very nicely, but they don't follow so strictly. And some people follow very strictly, but they don't preach. But you're the best because you not only preach, but you follow very nicely also. So there may be different types of spiritual masters too. You may learn from different devotees in different ways. Some devotees may give class very nicely or instruct us very nicely, and they can give all reasoning arguments, you know, to convince us about what to do, and they actually know very well, you know, how we can make advancement. We can follow them and make advancement, and we should be appreciative that they're actually, you know, acting as Krishna's representative. Because ultimately the real guru is Krishna. He's the one who's applying intelligence. And others, they may follow very nicely, and we may see their example because they're doing such nice service. And we become inspired just by seeing their example, although they may not personally preach to us, or they may not seem to understand the philosophy and its intricacies. But we become inspired by seeing their example. And someone may have the combination of those qualities. So all of them are respectable. Although there may be different degrees of respect, due to the fact how much they're really actually influencing my life and directing it. Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. Grantharaj, Nectar Devotion, Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai, Gaur Premanande.